Hello and welcome to Work in Progress, an exploratory podcast hosted by the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria, where you will hear from artists, curators, gallery staff, collaborators, and even different hosts as you listen to each episode. I'm Nicole Stambridge, Curator of Engagement at the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria, and I'm your host for this episode. Today's recording was produced on the traditional territory of the Lekwungen-speaking peoples, also known as the Songhees and Esquimalt Nations. In this episode, we are joined by collaborators from the Indigenous Intergenerational Exchange Program. This group included 15 participants who are all contributors to social justice and frontline activism in their respective communities. They began gathering bi-weekly in February 2021 to share cultural teachings, critical understanding, and creative processes within a healing online space. Their conversations resulted in the exhibition titled Holding Ground, which was on view at the AGGV from July through October 2021. Our hope is that this podcast episode will help extend the conversations that began with this project beyond the gallery's physical exhibition spaces and share the work surrounding this program more broadly with friends, family, and communities who might want to learn more. Today, I'm joined by artist Marianne Nicholson, Marika Swan, and educator and media maker Nikki Sanchez, who will start us off by sharing a bit more about their experiences from behind the scenes, leading and facilitating this evolving project. Hi, Marianne, Marika, and Nikki, welcome. Perhaps you'd like to start us off by introducing yourselves.
I'm Marianne Nicholson. My Kwakwala name is Ta'iakilokwa, and I was kind of involved in the Holding Ground project with Nicole Stambridge in regards to organizing and overseeing. And I'm an artist and kind of an activist, I guess, political activist for Indigenous rights.
Piali, I'm Nikki Sanchez, and I am a decolonial educator and a land-based teacher and a activist. And it was such an honor to be involved with Marianne and Marika and Nicole. And one of the roles that I played was just helping connect the art gallery with some of the really incredible women who've been doing such good work in different areas of their life.
Hello, my name is Marika Swan, or Amanus Aksup. I am a Tlo'okwiat artist and community archivist.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. I feel like so much of what happened in this experience of this project with the Indigenous Intergenerational Exchange and the Holding Ground exhibition, there was so much about process, like the time that it took. So like right now, this is the week we're exactly a year out from when we sent out all the invitations to those amazing folks who joined us on this experience that we weren't sure exactly what we put a lot of intention into what was created, but you know, we left a lot open to kind of unfold as it evolved. So, you know, thinking back to when we first started meeting in the fall of 2020, actually, what made you want to be part of this project? Marianne, maybe you want to speak to, because the project really came out of, maybe the starting place is to ask you to share, you know, because it all came out of an intention and an idea that you set forth. So do you want to share more about that?
Yeah, I've really been really doing a deep dive into institutional relationships with Indigenous peoples and kind of making the demand that institutions start to uphold and direct resources towards Indigenous peoples rather than continue to be extractive, which the historical relationship has been one of complete and utter extraction. And even the contemporary relationships today are mostly grounded in a very topical engagement with Indigenous issues. And that's been frustrating for me as an artist and as an activist. And so the conversations that we had in regards to this exhibition were, you know, how do we make an exhibition? How do we structure an exhibition and an engagement on Indigenous issues with Indigenous peoples that is aligned more with Indigenous needs? And a true Indigenous expression, not just bringing, like in the past, galleries have brought in Indigenous artists, but they've exhibited them in a completely colonial platform and way of interpreting what the works are and how they're consumed and who the audience is and how they're valued. And so when we were in discussion around what this exhibition should be, and one of the reasons why I was so heavily involved in process is because I was wanting to, de-objectify art practice and look at how much more holistic, fluid, and interrelational Indigenous cultural production and expression is. And so part of that was to also disassemble what within the gallery has been a traditional kind of authoritative relationship between curator and artist participants. And so when we brought in Nikki and Marika to be advisors to us and to help us facilitate a process, not a product or the production of a product, but a process that would question colonial ways of bringing Indigenous presence into an institution like the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria. And it was really remarkable in doing that, in just setting the groundwork by opening up the organization of the program to Marika and Nikki as equal participants. It completely transformed what this endeavor actually was. So I'm really grateful to have been a part of that, because I learned so much by trying to put into practice the criticality that I've been looking at the relationship with institutions like art galleries and museums, et cetera, in this particular exhibition that was ultimately put together and run through the course of a year.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, and it really did shift and expand the conversation when Nikki and Marika came on board, because we had started talking about certain things, but then actually talking them through more deeply with a bigger group really helped us bring more questions into the process. And I think that was really exciting. Nikki or Marika, did you want to share a bit about, other than I remember the first thing was because Marianne was part of it, that was a big draw.
Yeah, I remember that too. Oh, yeah. The timing of the invitation to collaborate was such a blessing. There was a confluence of events that were occurring, and one of which being this global pandemic that had really like rocked our realities and our ability to exist in community and in connection, and also really challenged frontline activism about how it could take shape in a safe way amidst a pandemic. And the other factor that was really significant for me was the culmination of 2 weeks of occupying the Victoria Parliament in solidarity with Wet'suwet'en. And that was led by Indigenous youth from 34 different nations. And what was carried out there, although it was framed in a really misunderstood way in the media as an anti-pipeline protest, was actually a profound like act of sovereignty and ceremony, and really incredible relationships were forged, and an alternative space of being and a way of interacting and really building community emerged. And after police interference and the arrests of some of the youth, that movement dispersed, and then quite shortly after we went into a lockdown. And so to have the opportunity to connect with all three of you and with the support of the art gallery to create a possibility, a potential of a container to really uphold not only the activism and courage and solidarity that was demonstrated by youth at the legislature, but by Indigenous women for generations and generations, to bring that together. It felt like this beautiful kind of like beam of sunlight during a very, very dark time. And the other piece of that is that bringing together the intersections of activism and land defense and sovereignty movements with art, right? And with storytelling and joy. And that was just such a gift at such an uncertain and difficult time.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that was, a big part of when Marianne started talking about what could be possible. It was really a way to support folks who had been on the front lines at the ledge and weren't able to be together to process what had happened. And so that was a big piece of wanting to bring folks together. So yeah, that was a really important part of it all. Marika, did you want to share a bit?
Yeah, for me, the invitation to be a part of this project came at a time when I was... Yeah, the invitation came at a time when I was choosing to like not be involved in very many things. And I think different people have had a different journey through COVID. And for me, I really felt like the ground move underneath me, and I did not feel like I had the confidence or the vision to just kind of keep forging forward. And most of my projects and most of the things that I was working on before COVID have been mostly put on pause. And I've just been really processing the changing environment and how different things are, and going back to kind of the very simple core parts of my life. So there hasn't been many things that I have committed to or been a part of through this time. But when the invitation came to be a part of this project, there was a few things that just, I couldn't say no, forced me to like not be able to turn the opportunity down, even though I was feeling very inactive and uncertain about how I wanted to continue with my community work, or just like what could possibly land right in this environment of, you know, a roller coaster of crisis and people not being able to gather in person and us being forced to kind of like do our best with connecting over social media or through Zoom or through other ways, which aren't usually the methods that I lean towards first. So I felt like pretty tentative and nervous about it, but then I also was really, I mean, really excited to work with Marianne. I'm a huge fan of Marianne's past work, the project she's done, have always been really exciting and filled me with a lot of like inspiration. But also one of the main aspects to the project that Marianne pitched was the creation of a collaborative curtain, which happens to be a art form that I have been really studying and focusing on for the last few years. In wanting to keep that art form alive and healthy in our communities. And I've been studying and learning about that in my own community, the role and the importance of curtains and the care of them. And all of those elements really inspire and excite me. So the idea of working on a curtain together seemed like just a wonderful, wonderful healing project to be a part of. I also, you know, went down and participated for a little bit with some of the ceremony down at the ledge. And it was really heartbreaking to see the momentum and the beauty of that space and the young people and how brave they were. And then watch as that kind of dispersed, how everyone went into such intense isolation was really concerning for many of us, wondering, knowing how this can play out, you know, and how it has happened in the past, where there's so much excitement and good energy and wonderful, but also there's like this really important part of processing and understanding what's happened. And I don't know how much of that we're able to do just in isolation on our own. I think ideally we continue to gather and learn and process and digest that experience together. And for me, as someone who's an artist, usually that processing and digesting involves like creative expression, involves creating projects that help to digest and process those things that have happened. So, yeah, it was just kind of like a perfect fit for me. And I'm really grateful that I did agree to be involved, because it kind of put the holding ground and our process together and our commitment to see this through in the best way possible really like pulled me out of a place of deep inactivity and got me moving again in the community and with other artists, which I feel really, really appreciative of.
Thank you. Yeah. I feel like so much of like a big part of what happened in this process was very intimate with the group that was invited in and the gatherings we had that led up to the physical thing, which was the exhibition. But it felt like that what happened in the exhibition and what Marianne was able to share with us in terms of the design and the making of the curtain was a culmination of everything that happened in those gatherings together for those months leading up. So I wonder if, you know, just to give folks a sense with, while still honoring the intimacy of what happened within individuals and all of us in that group, if we can find a way to maybe articulate a bit about what happened in that space. And if we can talk a bit about what we kind of shaped for the time in those spaces.
It's interesting. This I think there's a spiritual element to the process, the investment in the process, and really this idea of preparation. What does that really look like? And I think in the kind of Western colonial world, often that has to do with formal qualities. And for Indigenous peoples, it's actually much more about spiritual qualities. And we don't honor that enough within institutions, you know, whether they're governance institutions like the legislature, which was kind of basically not allowing the presence and the spirit of the Indigenous young people who were present outside its doorstep, you know, literally barring them from entry and participation in that system, and then to challenge the gallery to assist to create a space that would at least allow an expression, you know, that was more aligned with Indigenous ways of being than simply production, formal production. And so the meetings that took place were absolutely essential in that there was a practice that was being established there that was really based on sharing, collectivity, vulnerability, and support in human expression. And I was really moved and honored at the truth and of some of the sharing that was done in that circle, in that environment, because it's some, the rawness of human feeling and emotion is often suppressed by colonial systems, and it's soul crushing. So this process to agree to walk through together in these kind of extensive meetings, you know, meeting up, sharing of minds, sharing of ideas, sharing of human experience prior to establishing what the actual exhibition was going to be. You know, it was almost like when you prepare the ground, you know, you take time to prepare the ground and you prepare it well. And then what grows and flourishes in that through that effort, you know, is built on that preparation. And so, you know, the privileging of process over product was it was a really lovely process to participate in. Yeah. And these kind of weird hierarchies of authority were kind of removed from that setting. And what we had instead was the sharing of human experience, and that it was extraordinarily beautiful in that it was intergenerational. So we had all these people at different stages of their lives and their experiences sharing together. And there was no sense of authority as to how that should be laid out, or what was appropriate, what was inappropriate, etc. You know, like I know Nikki and Marika in particular really laid out helped to build an environment that would allow that process to take place in a safe way. So, and then it seemed like the artworks that ended up being created as they were kind of introduced into the space over time really also broke away from this idea that you would put up a show, it will show, and then it'll come down. And the expressions that came out from the work that was being done, I was just really humbled. That would be the word, humbled by those expressions.
Yeah, the whole process was really quite transformative, just from personal and kind of as a representative of the institution too, in terms of a model that we were able to share with the other folks at the gallery to show that, like, there's other ways of doing. I think that aspect of it was so, was such a gift to, you know, us imagining other ways of doing. And, you know, I feel really committed to making sure that like everything that took shape and that we learned in that process, that we don't lose that, right? That that gets built on and we can add to that. Yeah. And I'm just thinking, you know, Nikki, you were so, you know, knew a lot of the folks so well that were invited in. And, you know, it was great to see folks, like as Marianne said, there wasn't necessarily like a hierarchy that was created in that space. And so folks who were taking part would offer their skills at different points in the gatherings and share different things to support the group. And I just wondered if you had anything to share about the people you knew who took part and what it felt like to kind of watch that all unfold in the space with them.
Yes. I think, you know, that heartbreaking experience that Marika talked about, like I really went through that because the juxtaposition of like coming together to create this alternative space that was guided by ceremony and like really fueled by love and commitment to one another and to the land. And then to go from that into a lockdown and for everyone, while we were processing the trauma of the outcomes of the occupation of the legislature, for us to be isolated and also facing this like unprecedented modern reality. It was like, I felt like it was such a blessing and with so much like wisdom that you and Marianne, you know, kind of cultivated this vision because it enabled this opportunity to reconnect folks who had otherwise been, you know, separated from one another. And then also when Marika, you know, brought in the suggestion that rather than have it be youth focused, we really have it be focused not about someone's age, but about like the work that they're doing and how they're contributing to community and, you know, what they have to share. And so then bringing in, you know, folks who were at different stages of their lives and maybe didn't have anything to do at all with the occupation of the legislature, it felt like this rekindling of community, you know, and it really allowed for, and this is something that I feel so sad about, it allowed for us to have space to get to know each other and to learn to love each other, not out of like crisis and not out of, you know, necessity and not because, you know, we're having to come together to fight for something, but to actually just have an opportunity to be with one another and take time and to like co-create and collaborate. And they, you know, I think about the process that we went through as a group, and I feel like there was two phases, right? And this beautiful phase of like us, again and again, Jerry Amber's A Soft Place to Land, her feather nest is like, it's in my heart for life now. But we spent so much time, the four of us, cultivating a soft place for people to land. And that there was just so much care and also a lot of like faith and courage in that process, because like Marianne said, we divorced ourselves from these like tangible externalized objectives and really put faith in like spirit and like our intention. And then once we had, you know, kind of built this soft nest to welcome people into, everything took on a whole new life as well, because we had so many other people contributing to the space that was created. And it was really like, I think for me, that was the first time in my life that I've gone through an entire process with a formal institution like an art gallery, where it wasn't dominated by colonial values and like these, you know, our measurements and objectives. But it was, you know, really, we modeled it in a very, very different way. And I really hope to have the opportunity to do so many more processes like that in the future, because it felt fundamentally different. And it didn't feel like we'd created, you know, a curriculum for people to impose on people, or all of these things for people to do because we decided that that's what they should do. But we truly, you know, when we opened up the group and began our work together in the larger group, it still remained really a co-creation, and that reflexivity allowed for people's like their gifts and their contributions and their insights to be delivered to the whole group. And so the other piece of that too, that was so cool, was like, it was constantly emerging and revealing itself to all of us.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Nikki. Yeah. And I I've said this to you all as well, but like in this experience, it had a lot of layers to it. It was really intimate. There was a lot going on for people in the process. So we shared some really intense time together. But what was so kind of beautiful to witness was how consistently generous and kind everyone was through the entire process. Even when things, you know, got built up and, you know, moving towards the exhibition, which can be a stressful time trying to work those dynamics. But I was so appreciative of just, and it's weird to use the word consistent, but it just feels like everyone was just contributing and sharing and being part of it in a way that they just brought so much care and respect to the process. And I just really appreciated that. And again, it's such a beautiful model to see of what's possible.
Yeah, we were so, like, when we started working on this project, I felt like we were, or I was, so surrounded by people that were just completely overwhelmed, like completely overwhelmed with the things that they had committed to, what was going on. You know, so many people that were like really struggling to, you know, maintain their commitments to their full-time work or the things that they had said they would do, and trying to like pivot and create it. And like, it was just so overwhelming. And, you know, being involved with this project, like knowing that that was where we were at. And for me, I feel like I would watch people like get excited about projects and like be really into them. And then like 2 weeks later, something would happen. And then they like, you know, sustaining what they were excited about before, like it was just so unknown and touch and go with what was happening in our communities, that it forced us, I feel like, to really push back and reimagine like our relationship to like productivity based work. And I really appreciate that we explored that, the violence of that, of when it's only important, like what you produce, how violent that is to, and it goes completely against our way of being. And Mariana's right. Like that has been like the basis of so many different relationships with institutions and art galleries. And it's just whatever's left is the quality of what stands in the room. Right. And so I really, really learned a lot from going into a project and deliberately dismantling that together. And it was so transformative to me to be in a project where the basis and the most important focus was our relationship and the well-being of each other. And that whatever came out of it was just bonus to those things, that framework. And from that place of knowing that it's most important that people feel welcome to come as they are, to contribute whatever they have to offer, knowing that people may dip in and out from week to week, making the call in the beginning that, you know, we would disperse the funds we had in this way, regardless of people's participation, was really transformative for me in really accepting the project as it unfolded and releasing from myself, like my own expectations, that own part of me that I think has been ingrained through probably the public school system, just like mainstream employment, all these things where you're supposed to like achieve these goals, you know, nonprofit grant writing, where you like, you know, all that stuff. It teaches you to guide projects and coordinate projects in a certain way. And this project for me was like the complete opposite of that. It was everyone understanding that it will just create the best space we can, and people will come in and out as they want to and what feels right for them. And whatever's created is created. And whoever wants to be a part of this part can be a part of this part. And if people want to step forward and take on more, then they're welcome to. And in that release was like this like the pleasant surprise of generosity, of consensually giving, that you're not like obligated to produce three pieces or whatever. you can put something in if you like to. What would you like to put in? What size would you? Okay, you want to, you've got energy for this and that. That's great. And receiving that, knowing that it's coming from a place of generosity rather than obligation, was beautiful. And it's an experience that I think I'm probably still kind of processing. And I really do hope to carry into other things, because I feel like the opposite of that has, you know, I can see in other projects that I've been involved in where, you know, people have been struggling with other things in their life or other parts of life, and not able to like meet the deadlines or get things done exactly the way that they want to all the time. And then really feeling like we failed, you know, and being so hard on ourselves, not meeting what we agreed to do. And just being so much more open and flexible with those things, and understanding that everyone's showing up with the intention of giving whatever that they have to give offers so much of a better space, more creative and rich space, I feel. And I felt really excited about how that played out. I don't know if I'm articulating it right, and if anyone feels like they can really like explain that in different words or, you know.
I think you articulated that so well. What I would add is that so often when institutions or organizations try to create, you know, an Indigenous space or like, you know, female-centric space or people of color space, they will change the internal components to be reflective of that, but they won't change the invisible architecture of the programming, right? So all the things that you just said, Marika, about like deadlines and expectations and all the ways that we make our relationships transactional, you know, we can be making a curtain, but be doing it in a very colonial way. And there's like, those relationships are violent, and it's often really hard to see and be able to name why. Because the systems are just kind of like, this is just how we do it, right? This is just how it's been done. And so the reason for me that I feel like this experience felt fundamentally different than others that I have done that maybe had similar objectives is because the invisible structure, like that which guides the process, which, you know, creates the feeling, creates the experiences, but is invisible, we really dismantled that and approached this in a completely different way. And that felt so good. And it felt so good as well, like as a facilitator, to not feel as though I needed to pressure people to deliver. And we could like uphold that just their participation to whatever degree they were there or not, whether they put a piece in the art show at the end, it wasn't significant. We knew that the experience was going to be what each person needed it to be for them at that time. And there was so much consent there, and that felt so good and also so rare.
Yeah. The discussion around our effort to make the project more consent-based was really, really important framing for me, and that each person could choose what they offered and in what way they offered it. And it was a consent both ways, and it could be renewed and checked back in on. That was really important.
I would say as well, like if we were ever to have the opportunity to do something like this again, I feel like if we had had the ability to maintain the gallery space for, you know, a year rather than a few months, those waves of contributions and that like kind of rotating exhibition, I feel like there would have been so many more waves. And that was the other thing, right? That's so, so critical to understand is that, you know, because of the very nature of the issues that brought this project into being, which is like these legacies of resistance and this necessity at this time in Canada for people that actually have to be on front lines as like a way to protect their sovereignty and their community and their land base. The fact that we were able to have that space in knowing that even as we were doing this thing, you know, hoping to process the movements and frontline actions of the past, others were emerging. You know, Fairy Creek was emerging, and we had like young ones going back into another highly charged, you know, police surveilled situation while they're, you know, in this process of creating art and reflecting on their past movements. And that, I think that's a reality too, that for the foreseeable future will always be true, is that you don't get to like stop and walk away and process, because the things that incentivize the need to be an activist or a community organizer, those demands continue to come.
Yeah, it felt really important, the space that was given. And, you know, at the stage of the exhibition and how there was different, how it built up, you know, at the beginning, there was, you know, a selection of folks who contributed work. And then I think we had like two or three more iterations where more work would be added and things got shifted around. And then the curtain being that anchor that was consistent all the way through in the center of the space. But it was, you know, what was, I think, really exciting about giving that space is that for some folks, you know, their contributions came closer to the end. But then to see like what that meant for them to get, have work in there, to go through that process. And then when we had the closing gathering with the group, with those who could come and folks coming in, and some of them weren't from here, like that was, you know, Zoom wasn't ideal, but we were allowed to connect with folks who might not have been able to be part of it if we did it in person, right? And so for some folks, it was their first time coming to the gallery or being with everyone in person in the group, and then to see their work. Those were super cool moments. I mean, that, you know, you can't quantify that in a grant report. You know, when people say, what are the deliverables? How did you succeed? It's like, you know, the impact of it is not measurable that way.
I would say as well, like, and for anyone listening to this who wants to create something similar in like the spaces that they work or organize, another thing that was really significant for me was that we were able to pay our participants, you know, and like in a meaningful way, and not just with a like really flimsy honorarium, but to really like, not like just demonstrate that we are giving value to their time and their contribution. That felt so unique for one, and like so meaningful and important, especially given that we know how much sacrifice is being made by so many of these women to be able to show up as activists. And a lot of that is financial sacrifice and the sacrifice of like security. So to be able to compensate for time in a meaningful way, to demonstrate, because we live, you know, in a capitalist society, to demonstrate that we were giving time and money because what they have to contribute is of value, that felt really good.
I was wondering, Nicole, if you could speak to your own experience in regards to being a part of this project, because you came on board as kind of the curatorial rep for the institution. But that must have come with its own challenges. And one of the things that, you know, moving ahead into the future in the attempt from institutions to engage at these levels, you know, what were some of the challenges that you faced that are going to be inevitable? And how did you kind of work your way through that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it was an interesting year in so many ways. In 2021, the gallery was going through a major time of transition as well when this program launched. And, you know, I think it was so important for me to have the slow build with the four of you in terms of, the longer term relationship that you and I have had, Marianne, was really key to all of this, because we kind of we've worked on things before and we've been in conversation for a long time. So I had a starting point that felt like it was different than if I was working with somebody new, right? Like I felt like we were starting at a point where we were further in. And then having that really fulsome time with you and Nikki and Marika to really put intention and thought, because so much of, you know, the pace we work at sometimes is just like, it's producing, it's pumping things out. And that doesn't always feel good, right? It's not conducive to the type of work we're trying to do. And so That felt like such a gift to have that time to really build things well. And then, you know, and taking that back to my colleagues and getting, you know, bigger buy-in from the institution, you know, there was a lot of support there. I think everyone understood that this was really important work that was happening. But it does test people, because it's, in theory, it's one thing to agree to the kind of work that needs to be happening in institutions that's really systemic and transformative. But it's another thing to actually start doing it and really seeing what that means, what that commitment means. So, you know, logistically, in terms of the process, I felt like there was a lot of support. I mean, our collections and prep team were amazing in terms of the flow of the shifting of the exhibition having to roll out in the way it did, and be evolving and not a static thing. And just the care that they were giving to the work in the space and the people we were working with. So I felt like there was a lot of support in so many ways. You know, I believe there's intention to keep this going, this type of work, to keep building on this model. But we have a lot of ways of doing that are so ingrained in us, right? And it's these, you know, Marika was alluding to, like, the institutions and systems that we're part of that teach us a way of doing and a pace of working at and an intensity and, you know, the structure that we follow. And so sometimes it's hard for people to really imagine doing things in other ways, like really fully, truly, like, and deeply. And so, you know, I think that's part of our challenge moving forward. We have a lot of new people coming on board, you know, last year and into this coming year. And so we're still in a big time of transition, and all of those people bring vision and ideas that they can contribute and will, you know. I think a big part of us being able to build on this kind of work and keep it going, is will. And not being afraid of the stuff that we don't know how to do yet, because we didn't know how to do this going into it. Mm-hmm. We weren't sure what it was, or, you know, but we were careful in what we did, so that, and then we talked to people, we were transparent about what we were offering and asking, and asked for feedback. So that felt good. And as Nikki said, it feels good to pay people. Like, that's so essential to you know, acknowledge people's time. But I feel, in a way, we were kind of lucky last year, because it was a time of transition. And I think it was able to run with a lot of things in a way I might not have been in other times. So, but I know that there is a lot of will to keep moving in these directions. So that feels good. Yeah. But yeah, I'm not sure what else to say.
Well, it's interesting to see you frame a time of turbulence as a time of opportunity.
Mm.
You know, and when you were talking, I kept thinking about the legislature and how different our political landscape would be if, you know, the presence of, you know, the Indigenous, you know, activism on those steps was taken seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And there was space that was allowed for those ideas and those ways of being and what is being fought for. It could be transformative. And right now in society, we are facing incredible turbulence, and it's not going to stop. It's going to escalate.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe we can take hope in that, you know, through that turbulence, we are open to new ways of being, because it is really within Indigenous worldviews that there is an anchor of hope there. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, this project definitely, and I think I've shared that with you all, that this, it did feel like an amazing, it grounded me in an otherwise kind of tumultuous time. And so, I mean, that's the takeaway for folks if they're trying to really do this work in a significant way, that when it's really happening, it's actually really grounding.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause it can, yes, feel scary, mm-hmm, to a lot of people, that it's mm-hmm, it's unfamiliar, or the learning curve is steep, or you're stepping so far away from what you're used to, maybe in some cases. But I just found it to be, yeah, a really grounding experience.
And also, like, really affirmative in the power of having really clear, articulated intentions going in. Like, we really took the time to be really clear with each other and kind of talk it through and really set that groundwork, which made an enormous difference. Like, that gives me a real sense of hope. Mm-hmm. If you can really sit down with someone and be like, these are the most important things going into this project for us, and really knock that together, it's something that you can come back to, you know, and are we still staying true to, you know, like, it's a good reflective space, and it actually like can set you in a different direction. Like, that's really important, sense of hopefulness, you know, and new possibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I just wanted to say too, for all of you, I really appreciated your directness and honesty with me as well. And in the process, because I, you know, that was the only way we were going to get to where we needed to get to. And we didn't all know each other mm-hmm. at the beginning. Right. And so, I really appreciated that trust that you had in me to be honest and direct. It made for some really, really great conversations, just, you know, not just about this project, but it covered so much, and we were thinking through this, and it was really expansive, you know, the preliminary conversations that built up to all of this.
Now that I think of it, I'm pretty certain I could say that the three of you are the people I've spent the most time on Zoom with.
Wow.
Cumulatively, because we did, like, when you kind of go back through all of our planning meetings and then all of our, you know, group meetings and everything. And so, you know, some of our preliminary, like, when we were constructing the soft place to land together and conceptualizing it, some of those calls went on for 3 hours, you know, and we really spent so much time. But I'm thinking about what Marianne said about how it's, you know, we're in a time where we're at a threshold, and unfortunately things are going to actively have to collapse and break down in order for change to come. Mm-hmm. And because of the pandemic and the ways that that's really taken us away from the, you know, intangible things that give us strength, like, you know, spending time, being in cultural spaces, sharing food, coming together, like, you know, music, all of these things that fill our spirits up, right? That give us strength and allow us to connect into source that's bigger than ourselves and tap into that power that we can access when we move together, when we like come together and we work in solidarity. And that was so like acutely apparent at the ledge, and then it was all taken away. And so, you know, for me, I feel like there's so little value in our society as it currently exists around like the value of community building and the value of relationship building and tending to one another and caring for each other, not for a specific outcome or not with like one reason, but because that in itself is so worthwhile. It's of so much value. And so I feel like that was a piece of what we did, is we, you know, spent a year, we dedicated a year to really, how can we cultivate really beautiful connection and community so that we can give each other strength and be light for each other in a really dark time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there were some amazing moments in those. I mean, who would think in a Zoom call, like, you could just be so touched and moved by each other in this virtual space, but there was some really significant moments in those times together. So yeah, really appreciated that. So, I mean, I feel like you all shared, you know, quite fully in terms of the impact of the project. And I'm just wondering if, you know, because I think a key piece of, you know, when we're working with folks, we want to make sure that the projects they're working on with us relate to the work they're doing. And I think, you know, from what you all said, that's part of why you joined this project, was because it was connecting to things you were interested in doing or would support the work you were already doing in some way. Do you want to share a bit about, you know, what you're working on now, or, you know, if there's things that came from this project that you were building on or not related to this at all, but just where things are going for you from here?
I think for me, it was always been part of my intention to really question these relationships, the inequitable relationship between colonial institutions and Indigenous communities and peoples. You know, I grew up under conditions where my small community has been extracted from by academic institutions, galleries, museums, capacity, you know, humans. You know, like we have a small community now, around 65 people. When I left home to go to school, there was maybe 100, 125 in the summer, lots of children. We're down to 65. The future of our community is uncertain. And I'm in the process of trying to return to my community to bring my own personal capacity back to community to try and help with the community's longevity. And that part of that is to highlight the colonial process of destruction and extraction, and to demand that if people are going to even consider the word reconciliation, that means giving up space. That means land back. That means enough space for Indigenous voice to be expressed and to be listened to. And I am frustrated. I'm frustrated with the institutions. I'm frustrated with the legislature and their incapacity to provide space, to listen, to be present, other than as an authoritative dictator. And so for me, I continue this work to really call institutions, academic institutions, artistic institutions, museum institutions, to task, to look at what does truly remaking this relationship look like, and trying to provide a more equitable experience for us as Indigenous peoples, where we're not always being extracted from, you know, where there's an actual return. So, I'm really passionate about that. And I seem to be speaking up more about it and less concerned about, I guess, you know, like fitting in, fitting into institutional spaces as they exist. I don't want to fit in anymore. And so, you know, like having some success under our belts in engaging with an institutional space in this way, it has really emboldened me to keep speaking out about it and to keep advocating for it and to try and center my practice in a way that is empowering of Indigenous voice and not disempowering. So I'm excited going ahead.
Yeah, for me, going through COVID has been like a huge process of completely dismantling everything that I was doing before and kind of breaking everything down to a complete ground level and then slowly starting to build up a new structure and way of being that works for me in an environment where things are constantly changing and the future feels increasingly uncertain. And what I need in that space is different. And so I do think that, you know, obviously this has been an enormous tragedy and so much stress, and there's been so much loss of many things, not just, you know, lives, but it has put an enormous stress on our communities. And we're also going through great climate grief, but not being able to just like continue in the wheel, the habitual wheel I was on before. Like I was just going through the motions of this kind of like cycle of productivity and the types of things I was involved in and, you know, the way I usually operate in life and me. And COVID like completely blew that all up. But I do also think like there has been an opportunity there for me to completely clear out my entire space and reassess like what is actually important to me, what is actually a value to me. I think also, you know, going out there and being involved with Berry Creek was an enormously transformative experience in my perspective. And I've been processing kind of like all of these things that I've learned about myself through this great upheaval and kind of disorientation. And I am starting to feel like a sense of moving forward just now, maybe in this spring. And what is emerging for me more than anything is how important it is to center relationships and connection. And if you approach your life on the basis of like centering your relationships and your connections to others, it's a completely different frame than if you're kind of putting things in different compartments of, you know, these are the people I work with, and this is my family, and this is my friend, and this is my partner, but really approaching life based on the understanding that connection and relationship are like the most important life ways from which to operate from, is kind of getting me into a different way of thinking and the way that I'm kind of reapproaching becoming more activated in my life. Yeah, there's quite a few people that do work in our community around healing from residential school trauma. And one of the teachings that's like filtered down from me that sticks with me a lot is, you know, when we're traumatized, often like we shrink, like we've been hurt, right? We've been traumatized, something's happened. And as a self-protection, you may shrink and limit and pull in a way to protect yourself from that happening again. But in reality, in order to like move forward from healing from trauma, we have to actively rebuild those relationships and connections, and we need to like mold out. And we think that being shrinking in is like safer, but the correction is connection. And to me, that makes a lot of sense for me. And so I don't know what that looks like in terms of like what project I'm working on. But I know that strengthening like my relationships and moving out has been like my core process through this, like starting with my intimate life, the people that I was cocooned in my little bubble, in my house, in my family, moving slowly up to the people that I am in constant relationship around, just their well-being, and, you know, people that we're like very connected to and checking in on how we are. And then like moving out to the people in my life that I go to, that I have one of those kind of inspiring relationships, you know, people you run into, you just love talking with them because it just kind of stimulates you. And there's something about them, something about the way you connect with each other that brings both of you renewed perspective and energy in whatever it is that you're interested in or processing at that moment. And moving out from there feels like the best like way forward for me.
Thank you, Marika.
Yeah, thank you, Marika. That was so beautiful. Yeah, I mean, it's so, I feel like since the onset of the pandemic and the outcome of the legislature occupation, that it's felt like a whirlwind, you know, and it's like, it's really hard to know up from down. And here in Victoria, the impacts of the pandemic have meant that like housing is almost impossible to find and even more impossible to afford. And I so resonate with what Marika was saying about how the pandemic really offered an opportunity to reevaluate, you know, what truly matters and what we are making our lives about, you know, where we're giving the energy and focus of our lives. And so while like on the one hand, well, the pandemic has helped me to strip away paradigms of colonization and compliance within capitalism and upholding values that do not align with, you know, what my heart believes in and who I want to be as a human being. At the same time, all of the ways that the structures of extractivist capitalism, colonialism, patriarchy are working on not only me, but the young people that I like came to be so close with throughout the ledge occupation and also deepened through our project together. Like there hasn't been a single month that has gone by where I wasn't either like, yeah, trying to find housing or fundraising for someone just to cover basic necessities. And like that includes myself, you know, at different times. And so while it's like this really crazy kind of like opposite processes happening simultaneously, where on the one hand, I'm seeing more and more through this mythology that's been created as our value system as an outcome of capitalism. The more that I'm like mentally detaching myself from that in my physical lived reality, what it takes to just exist right now requires so much effort and like strategy and problem solving. And especially because I'm not just trying to do that for my individual well-being, but with a consciousness and a commitment, a sense of accountability to like the young ones who are coming up in this time. And like, I can't imagine
what it would be like to be, you know, going through, like, I'm 35 and this feels really daunting, and it makes me, you know, like, want my mummy. And so I'm thinking of, like, these, like, for these young ones who are, like, just off on their own for the first time and trying to begin their life as independent individuals, to be navigating through all this. It really, you know, my heart is really, really tender for the challenges of that. And so in my work, you know, I'm still very much committed to finding ways that we can take these intersections of, like, the wealth that comes from within us that is infinite, that is truly, you know, where we're going to find the solutions, where we're going to envision what other ways of economies and governance and things that are possible, where we're going to reclaim the things that have been taken for us, and really trying to, as much as possible in, you know, a multitude of different fields, bring that creativity and that, like, that collective power that we can tap into when we really do work together to bring it about. And so, like, on the one hand, I feel so fulfilled and so lucky and so grateful for the work that I get to do. And then on the other hand, the sense of, like, scarcity and, you know, pressure, the way that capitalism just grinds on you, it's really painful. And I, like, I really wish I was, you know, more than just a human being so that I could just, like, wave my hand and change it. But I can't. And I know that the only way that we can ultimately is when we remember how to come together and tap into that collective power. So I guess that's all to say, too, that I just believe so wholeheartedly that the more processes like this one that can come into existence, the more that we can take time to, like, celebrate and reveal the treasures that we hold inside, the strengths, the insights, the innovation that's possible, the way that we have the capacity to fuel one another, to hold each other up, to be that light in the darkness. In these times, I feel like the more we could have processes, communities, you know, art creation, times to sit together, not in a transactional way, but just truly, like, basking in the glory of what it means to have one another and, like, how valuable that is, the better off we'd be. And I know for me, the only way that I'm going to get through this time is if I continue to, you know, find or cultivate those spaces.
Thank you, Nikki. That was so beautifully said. And I think, you know, this kind of work is hard, right? Because it's really human work. And yeah, like, if we had superpowers, Nikki, that would be amazing to wave a wand and make things change. But it is really, you know, as Marika said, that connection and the coming together that keeps us, you know, in a good place. And I think that's what this project really did for all of us, you know, not just the people we invited in, but I think we all felt supported by what was happening in that space, or that experience was helping us do the work we needed to do. So I think that is really a takeaway from all of this, is that collectively so much more can happen when we do things collectively. And I think that's one of the things you pointed out to Marianne at the beginning, and was part of our conversations, was this wasn't about individual, it was about collective. And that, I feel, was really shared in the curtain design that you created, Marianne, for everyone to contribute to and build. So yeah, any other final thoughts, Marianne? Do you want to have the last comment on this? I feel like this was your brainchild, so I just wanted to, there's a moment, a cumulative
I was thinking, like, you know, the conversation that we've had, this is a good time to kind of end that conversation. Mm-hmm. Covered a lot of ground, and I'm really appreciative of the words that were shared today, and I look forward to kind of what future endeavors look like, and mm-hmm. I'm really appreciative of this one. And I walk away with hope, you know, and that it does come from that collective experience, and it's absolutely invaluable. So I just wanted to say, you know, Vela Kesla, for that opportunity to work with you guys on this. It's really been an honor.
Marianne, Marika, and Nikki, thank you so much for joining me in this program. And a huge thank you to all of the Indigenous Intergenerational Exchange participants, including Jerry Ambers, Aya Klappis, Ace Harry, Lisa Canoris, Laura Manson, Jessica Mayhew, Miguan Feather Rain Nolt Campo, Ross Nieslaus Jr., Stephanie Papik, Coral Shaughnessy Moon, Nabi Du Taylor, and France Chapagne. Each person contributed so generously to this project in different ways, and a few of these wonderful folks have agreed to share some additional thoughts about their experiences with us today, starting with Stephanie Papik.
I guess the gathering started during COVID, and it was a really just wonderful timing for me where a lot of change was happening in my life. And then this invitation emerged to be a part of this gathering of Indigenous youth and femmes and Two Spirits. And it was just like a really beautiful place to be able to come together and bring some closure to some events that had happened earlier in the year, kind of pre-COVID. And it was just a beautiful way to be received, brought in by community from Indigenous artists and land protectors, and that kind of like recognition and passing of the like kind of like passing of the torch or acknowledgement of like of having similar shared experiences generations prior, to know that we're not alone in this journey, and then having this space to come together just to witness, to be heard, and to be nurtured. It was a really beautiful space. Also with the forethought of just of that holding ground, holding that space for the time to happen where each of the artists were able to have that time to be creative and to make something to offer. And I think just that kind of foresight to be able to have that vision of what could be helpful in terms of creating and holding that space for everyone to be able to share and offer their creative gifts at their own time and pace, especially during this time of a pandemic. I think it's just so beautiful. And then also how it brought so many of us together to be able to work on it together. And I think that really helped to see that further sense of belonging and creativity for each of us to be able to contribute. Holding space for me comes a lot through, first for me, through circle practice and in creating a container for humans. You know, humans invariably, innately, you know, want to be good and do the right thing. So creating that space for us to be our best selves. And I have a background in science and honors bachelor of science in biology. So I always like to bring in the brain kind of science. And it's also how our brains work too. You know, when we create spaces that are nurturing, strength-based and positive, it puts our brains in our prefrontal cortex. So it puts us in that planning, thinking, compassionate part of our brain versus when we're in situations that don't feel safe, it activates our amygdala. So our behavior as responses could be fight, flight, freeze, or fawn. And so that kind of creating space for how we can be in relation to each other. And so that same, and then being able to hold that space and you need something like whether in with humans in circle, holding that space is helpful to have someone sitting across from you that, you know, kind of holding that centered, holding that space together. So similarly in that space, holding space with that was a curtain, you know, it's creating this foundation of belonging and grounded in the land and the medicines of the land. And so that's what I mean by holding space. I don't know if that makes sense. It was kind of felt like it was a fun state base to be able to explore different ways of expressing creativity there, whether it's current pieces or some that I've done over time. one of them was carving a hulik, Inuit stone lamp, and I had done that a while ago in terms of part of that reclaiming ancestral practices and responsibilities as being a young, or not so young, would have been normally Inuk woman and Two-Spirit. And so just showing some diversity and kind of, you know, sometimes people will I hear narratives like, you know, you should only work in one medium or that kind of thing. And just kind of breaking some of those narratives. So including sculpture, and then the piece that I, there was one I created in response to the gatherings that we had over time and reflections on past activities in terms of land protection. And one of the beautiful gifts I saw in that was the recentering of Indigenous youth, putting them back into the center of the circle, and how transformative and what a beautiful thing to witness from kind of that, you know, even as myself in my younger years, always feeling like I don't belong. I'm messaged that you're not enough, all those kind of like harmful societal messages given to Indigenous youth. So to like turn that on its head, now center them and have everything focused on them. And so the piece I did was putting the camas flowers in the center of a circle, and a teaching from Marianne Thomas from Esquimalt Nation has shared over many years how youth are our flowers, Spakum. And I just love that analogy because, you know, when you see flowers or plants and they're suffering, what do you do? Do you like chop bits off and stick them in the corner and remove privileges and punish the flower to help, you know, or what do you, how, what helps it be nourished, right? You take care and attention, you make sure it has nourishment and sun and water and you know, and so that same piece for youth. And I think that's a bit of a culture shift in terms of from Western ways of being that I've learned, for example, as parenting versus my own Inuit culture in that transformation of how being being generous and kind, even in those moments, and hard on the situation, but kind on the person. And I think it's just transformative. So that was the pencil crayon drawing that I offered, and also had lots of, so they were kind of in a bubble, a circle, and then there was other bubbles too. And that's another teaching from my Inuit culture, that our spirits are in a bubble in our body. And I love learning about that because, you know, we hear this term white fragility, and fair enough, it gets people's backs up, especially when you think about that neuroscience. And then when I learned about that concept of our spirits being in a bubble, like a little mini me inside a bubble, and when we pass on, that bubble leaves our body. And so I just thought, oh wow, you know, we're all fragile. And it's so important to remember that in terms of how we approach each other with kindness and care, even in times of urgency or hard times. Yeah, it's something I really appreciate in learning more about my Inuit culture. Like when someone passes on in your family, and then somebody is born into your family, they'll often be given that name, and then they're of that elder, and then they're treated with the same respect as that elder, plus whatever they gain through their own actions and through their own words. And I just love that because, right, like, yeah, I've learned as much, if not as more than I have from Indigenous youth as Indigenous elders as well. You know, there's, and like from my own children, like wonderful mirrors for me to have to learn about my own biases, my own blind spots, and how to be human in this world. I feel weepy with gratitude. It's been a very healing experience, especially with that sense of belonging, you know, especially being an urban Inuk, displaced from my homelands for most of my life, and often in the dominant culture, not always feeling like I fit in or belong. And so being invited into that space was, it's just been a very nurturing, healing space. And I'm really grateful to have been and honored to have been included. I don't always consider myself as an artist. So even that, you know, being recognized in community and brought in is just, it's meant a lot to me. Yeah, I think the only thing I'd add is that I'm calling in from Hoosakam, which a good friend and colleague, Bradley Dick, whose ancestors are from these lands, taught me that it means place of clay, also known as James Bay here in the Kwangin Territory. And I have deep gratitude that I have to the elders and the youth and community members from Songhees and Esquimalt Nations who've been really generous in sharing knowledge and teachings that have helped me how to learn how to walk in a good way while I'm a visitor here. And gratitude to you and all of the art gallery and everybody who's been involved in supporting making space for Indigenous people and practice and knowledge. It's so important during these times.
Thank you so much for sharing more about your experience and your work in the exhibition, Stephanie. Next, we'll hear from Miigwaan Feather Rain Nolt Campo.
My name is Miigwaan Feather Rain Nolt Campo. Miigwaan is Ojibwe for feather, and Rain is French for queen. My art series is of Mother Earth and why she's so important to the First Nations people. I have a three-piece series. So the original one is just Mother Earth and her image, or my image on what a reconciled Canada should look like. The second piece to the series is the creation story for why, or for how Turtle Island formed to be. So it's the Anishinaabe creation story of Turtle Island. And the third piece of the series is Mother Earth's prayers. And then it speaks on how sick the earth is and why she's so important to us. What smudging symbolizes and how important the eagle is to us. So they're just old teachings and kind of new teachings blended in together into art pieces. And I think it all ties in together because Mother Earth is our, like, the main base to who we are as Indigenous people. It's like we are the children of the earth and we take care of our mother. So we get all of our resources and everything that we need from the land. That's why she's so important to us. So all the other Indigenous people's pieces in the space, they talked about similar ties to my series, like lots were to do with healing, or it all just ties in, I feel. The experience was awesome, like being able to come together with other Indigenous artists and talk about healing or what our visions are for the future or how we have healed or what works for us was really amazing to be able to work with all Indigenous female artists and Two-Spirited. Being able to come together and have our art up in a space, in a gallery, I think that was healing in itself for us to be able to indigenize a space and be able to have our stuff up on the wall. But it was a very sacred time for all of us to be able to come together and hold space for one another during a pandemic and still be able to create a beautiful space for the public and for generations to see. I got to connect with all the women. We got to put our heart and spirit onto the curtain, our handprints. And it was just fun and also healing being able to come together and create something together and be able to display it publicly for other people. And so it was an awesome experience. And the people that I met are going to be like lifelong friends now. And I'm really grateful for that opportunity and experience and how we were all able to come together and how everybody made it to Victoria and
It was a really beautiful experience.
Thank you, Feather. In closing, we'll hear from Laura Manson, who offered to read an excerpt from the text panel that accompanied her woven cedar mat in the Holding Ground exhibition.
Utlasish Laura Manson, Tlaokwit Aksup, Umiaksu Carol Manson. So hello, my name is Laura Manson. I am from the Tlaokwit First Nation. I'm a descendant of residential school survivors. My parents attended the Christie Residential School located on Mears Island near Tofino, BC. It was in operation from 1900 to 1983. It closed 1 year before I was born. I'm the eldest of four children. My mother had me at the young age of 17. I was in and out of foster care for my first 16 years of life. My siblings spent anywhere from 1 to 5 years in foster care as well. I grew up disconnected not only from my family, but also from my culture and my traditions. The majority of my time in foster care was spent in a Catholic home. To belong, I became a firm believer and practiced Christianity. Then in my mid-30s, I came out as bisexual on social media platforms, which led me to walk away from Christianity. I couldn't follow a God that made me feel ashamed for who I truly am. Within the last 2 or 3 years, I've been reconnecting with my language, culture, and traditions. Alongside my daughter, we are beaters, cedar weavers, and proud Indigenous women. Through reclaiming our culture and traditions, we have also reclaimed our sense of community and belonging, which is how I became involved with this project. This project is a two-piece contribution to this exhibit. The first part is telling you my truth, which includes the loss of my beloved brother. The second part is sharing how I am holding ground. Truth. Culturally speaking, when we lose a loved one, we do not use their name for a year. We're supposed to put their photos away for the year as well. This allows their spirit to move on to their next journey. If we use their name or look at their photo and grieve for them, we're essentially tying their spirit to this earth and they cannot move on to their next journey. However, my mother is willing to make an exception because of how we lost him. My beloved brother was shot and killed by the police in my family home on the Opitzit Reservation. His name was Julian Jones, and he was 28 years old when he was brutally killed. He was born June 11th, 1992, and was taken from us on February 27th, 2021. He was a loving and forgiving young man. He loved so generously. He acknowledged everyone, stranger or not, every relation of his, he would call by name. He would acknowledge an aunt as mom, uncle as dad, and cousin as sister or brother. I never knew him to hold a grudge. In more ways than one, he was a bigger person than I am, despite the age gap, 8 years. I love and miss my brother so much. I'm never getting him back. His life was senselessly taken from us. I want you to pause for a moment and reflect on what I have just shared with you. Did you question, was he carrying a weapon? Did he threaten the officer's life? Did you try to criminalize him or justify his death at the hands of police? The truth is that I have been asked these questions after disclosing the loss of my brother. Holding ground. Despite all of this anger and unbearable grief, I am desperately trying to reclaim what was robbed of my ancestors and robbed of my family through the ongoing violence inflicted by residential schools, culture, tradition, and ceremony. These are my birthrights. Anything I've learned over the years, I had to seek for myself. A part of my healing involved a sacred ceremony of being brushed off the day before my brother's funeral. This ceremony required us to hold onto a piece of spruce in each hand and step on a piece as well. We were to release what we were feeling at that moment into the spruce. A gentleman was chanting a wolf song and another gentleman brushed us off with a spruce branch. Once we were ready, we were directed to release the spruce from our hands and throw them behind us. Then we were to step forward onto a cedar woven mat. The cedar mat you see woven here is a significant part of my healing journey. Once stepping onto that mat, we were to think of what we wanted from our ancestors in that moment to support us to move forward. I personally was releasing anger and asking for strength to forgive and heal from this unimaginable loss. It is important to me to instill healthy and safe coping mechanisms for my daughter, Inktsu. I do not want her to resort to unhealthy coping mechanisms down the road like drugs or alcohol. I want her to be able to lean onto our teachings during trying times like these. I want intergenerational trauma to end, or at the very least, begin to heal with us. So that there's the written piece for our contribution to this art exhibit, Holding Ground. Behind me here, you will see the cedar woven mat that my daughter and I wove together. The cedar we harvested together from our own territory. And we spent about 6 to 8 hours weaving it together, which in itself was a real honor and privilege, because that right there was robbed of my mother with her mother. And I would imagine with my late grandmother, Rosemary Charlie Mitt, and her mother. So just recognizing what a privilege it is to not only harvest cedar, but also weave with cedar, with the knowledge carried by other knowledge keepers. Due to colonization, this wasn't a practice that I learned from my own parents or my grandparents. It was literally learned from YouTube. So I recognize that it's a real privilege to be able to carry on this knowledge, although it may not be directly from my family or my nation, but it is a practice that we will continue on. Thank you to the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria for this honor and privilege of participating in this art exhibit, Holding Ground. Thank you, Marina, Nicole, and other faculty for holding space for us to continue to hold ground and contribute various pieces to this exhibit. Just having space to acknowledge the trauma and where I come from and the ongoing trauma that my ancestors were robbed of, to be told not to practice our culture, to be told not to practice our traditions, to be told not to practice our language, has been really traumatizing and genocide. I just want to wrap up by saying thank you very much. I really appreciate this opportunity to share my truth and how I'm holding ground. Tlako, tlako.
Thanks again to Marianne Nicholson, Marika Swan, Nikki Sanchez, Stephanie Papik, Miguan Feather Rain Note Campo, and Laura Manson for sharing your time and thoughts with us today. For those who want to learn more about the Indigenous Intergenerational Exchange Project or the Holding Ground Exhibition, visit aggv.ca. This is Work in Progress, a podcast series created by the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria, located on the Kwungan Territory, also known as Victoria, BC. Work in Progress is generously supported by Canada Council for the Arts Digital Now grant.